Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Jim, when we were covering, and we still are covering, of course, the situation in Egypt, Mubarak's gone. But during the whole lead-up to his departure, there was a lot of hand-wringing in the U.S. about what would happen if he left. There's still a lot of hand-wringing about what might come. So there was, on the one hand, a lot of support for the people who just wanted freedom. And on the other hand, what would come next? What could be possibly worse? But the good thing that we're seeing now in some of these places like Iran and Libya is there's not really anything that could be worse. So go people in the streets. If you want to take out Muammar Gaddafi, if you want to try and take down the mullahs, unfortunately, I think the odds are kind of stacked against you given their systems. But hey, the more pressure you can put on them, the more light we can shed on it. Even the Obama administration this time is at least saying that the brutal repression of the protesters in Iran is a bad thing, which is a step forward. So in those two countries, Katie barred the door. Go for it.
Yeah, the Wall Street Journal had put it today. The difference between anti-American dictatorships and pro-American dictatorships is that the pro-American dictatorships have to at least pretend to have some semblance of scruples. Or else at that point they become a dictatorship that America can't even pretend to be on good terms with. In this case, go baby. In Libya, you know, you're looking at a country that is, you know, metaphorically between a rock and a hard place. You know, Tunisia on one side, Egypt on the other. Kind of tough for Muammar Gaddafi to say, yeah, this isn't going to work here. It's not, you know, we're nothing like those countries on either side of us.
Right.
Iran, we've seen this show before, and we've seen it end very badly for the protesters. But I think that's, in a way, that's even more encouraging that this isn't one of those things like post Tiananmen Square where we saw one really brutal crackdown and that kind of killed the movement that nobody else really wanted to endure. There are only so many people who are willing to lay down their lives for the dream of a better, you know, freedom and a better life. In this case, in Iran, it looks like there's still a lot of people who are really fed up with the regime. And even though the protesters' ideal regime may not be the same ideal as we Americans would want, you know, better than Ahmadinejad, better than the current mullahs, let's say go for it. And they were starting to see a somewhat better tone from the Obama administration. I'd like to see President Obama with a giant foam number one finger, say, you know, giving that one to the folks in the streets and saying, we support you. And I'd like to see a giant foam other finger to the regimes in Iran and Libya and stuff like that. But I probably won't reach that point, but at least it looks like the Obama administration is slowly learning that this is a wave that can have some benefits for America. And we don't need to just stand on the sidelines and hedge our bets and look hesitant.
Well, let's move on to our down martini today. And that brings us to the floor of the House of Representatives. These people that we're about to hear from are no stranger to this process. We're going to hear from Nancy Pelosi twice, once a little bit later. But here's Nancy Pelosi in explaining why she's against the Republicans' efforts to slash $100 billion from the remainder of this year's budget.
And is it a statement of our values to deprive women of primary care? When it comes to health and education, Republicans put women and children last.
Well, it looks like my watch is pretty much set right, Jim. We called that last week, and it's right on time. Women and children, Republicans hate you. What a surprise. We're hearing that message from Democrats during a budget debate.
Yeah, you know, one you are – this is hardly a unpredictable tactic on the part of Democrats. And as you were describing it, I was thinking way back to the late 90s when I was a little tadpole reporter during the Patients' Bill of Rights. Before Obamacare, this was the big effort of Democrats. They wanted to let people sue their HMOs because, as we all know, the healthcare system was just a few lawsuits away from getting a whole lot better. And I just remember that, you know, that it was government by anecdote, that the Democrats would bring out little Timmy, who had some terrible disease, almost straight out of one of the Airplane movies, and say, you know, are you going to say to little Timmy he can't sue his HMO, which unplugged his defibrillator and, you know, his respirator and you know, stepped on him on the way out while shaking his parents, you know, upside down with, you know, change coming out of their pockets? And then, the Republicans would come out and they'd bring out some doctor who'd been sued by some, you know, shyster ambulance chaser and lost his practice. And, you know, in each one of these cases, you had these competing anecdotes. And I remember thinking, well, you feel bad for Timmy. You feel bad for the doctor. None of this really gets us a sense of what laws would actually improve the situation or if these laws would make things any better. So we're going to get a heck of a lot more of that. I think what worries me a little bit is that the Republicans are going to have a lot of numbers on their side. The Democrats will probably once again shove out little Timmy in his wheelchair. And I guess the only way Republicans can point out is, you know, how much debt do you want to saddle little Timmy with? I mean, you think he's in that wheelchair now. He'll be on a stretcher by the time he looks at the interest rate payments we're going to have in the debt. So pick your poison. There's unpleasant choices now. There's unpleasant choices later. I mentioned kind of my closing point of the jolt. if there are no more good scenarios, no more easy, pain-free ones, it makes it a little bit easier to do the right thing, doesn't it? You know, it's not like you're forsaking the easy route, because there is no easy route.
Yeah, there is only one. And here's Nancy Pelosi trying to claim that she's been on that route all along. I really like this one.
We must continue to aggressively attack waste, fraud, and abuse, and we will subject every taxpayer dollar we spend to the toughest scrutiny, ensuring that the American people are getting their money's worth.
She's going to continue to do that? I don't know what she's been doing for the last 4 years, but if that's her definition of rooting out waste, fraud, and abuse and scrutinizing every tax dollar, heaven help us if she gets lax in that department, Jim.
Yeah, I haven't checked the figures myself, but I've seen this cited argument that the amount of debt run up by the Pelosi Congress dwarfs all of the debt accumulated by the entire country since George Washington, since the founding of the country. So if this is our idea of debt management, I'd hate to see her idea of what runaway spending looks like. Once again, every time I hear Nancy Pelosi make a comment like that, I get why we disagree with her, and I get why in some ways we like her, because she's such a terrible leader of the Democrats. What I don't get is why the Democrats love her and why they keep having her as their spokesman on, you know, important issue after important issue.
On to the third martini now, Jim, and usually the bizarre martini has quite a bit of humor attached with it, whether it's ridiculous or otherwise. This one, decidedly not funny, although the fact that someone tried to make this funny is really the reason we'll be talking about this. And that's the story that broke on Tuesday, the horrific attack on CBS reporter Lara Logan in Cairo on the day that Mubarak stepped down, brutally assaulted, brutally raped. She's back in the U.S. She's still recovering. She may soon leave the hospital. You've been tracking the controversy, though, surrounding a man named Nir Rosen, who until very recently was employed by New York University, and some of just his incredibly insensitive comments. Tell our listeners the story here.
Sure, I'll take it from the beginning. And the first thing I'd note is that if you'd asked me before late afternoon yesterday, who is Nir Rosen, I might have had some vague familiarity with the name, but knew next to nothing about him. He's a journalist who's reported all over the Middle East and Afghanistan, and apparently has very strong anti-war views, but I didn't know that before yesterday, and don't think it's really all that relevant to it. He's on Twitter, and I saw some folks on Twitter kind of reacting to him, checking out his stream, and his comments late afternoon were just one horrific comment after another about the rape and assault on Lara Logan. And it's just, I'm not even going to repeat them on this podcast. They're on Campaign Spot if you want to check them out. They're just about as insensitive as you could possibly imagine. And what was kind of striking was not just, you know, look, everyone says stupid things from time to time, but people were reacting with horror, the sense of how can you say this? And he just kept digging himself in deeper, making even worse, you know, comments and even more, you know, kind of dismissing this as something serious and saying it'd be funny if the same thing happened to Anderson Cooper, et cetera, et cetera. Having a sense that at some point he was going to want to negate or erase these comments, I took a few screenshots of that Twitter feed, having this sense that it was going to be important to preserve the record of this, and said, you know, look, this is what he's saying. Are there any grown-ups at NYU who want to step in here and say, you know, you really shouldn't be saying this? And these are probably about as appalling types of comments as you could possibly make. Essentially, Nir Rosen, what the hell is wrong with you? And Greg, I'm cleaning this up for our podcast. And so collected them, waited for a reaction. He ultimately then apologized and started erasing some of the offensive comments. And he later said that he would no longer be using Twitter. Greg, I don't know about you. My beef is not with the use of Twitter. My beef is with the reaction. You know, even if you're not using that particular form of communication to let everyone know how much you can't stand Lara Logan and that this moment you have zero sympathy for her and you think she's a terrible reporter, et cetera, et cetera. I don't care about that. I care that you're reacting that way. I mean, you know, once again, what the hell's wrong with this man? Even if, like, you know, the worst reporter who I can't stand went through some sort of ordeal like that, you put all that stuff aside. I mean, for God's sake, this woman just got raped and she's, you know, apparently still in recovery. So as I typed this up, I was like shaking with anger, which generally is a very bad sign. Usually that's when you end up writing something stupid and that you'll regret. But I basically kind of said, all right, NYU, here it is. What's your move? What's your reaction to this? Are you going to brush it under the rug or make some, you know, mealy-mouth statement about sensitivity? Or are you going to, you know, really respond to this and react to this? Called them this morning. They said they'd have an announcement a little later this morning, and probably about 10:20 or so this morning, I got a statement from them saying that Nir Rosen had offered his resignation and they'd accepted it. And they said that it was They were deeply distressed. It was completely unacceptable, cruel, insensitive, and this ends Rosen's affiliation with them. And I, you know, after being rather cynical about their expected reaction to this, I have to give NYU some credit for taking it seriously. Something of a, I don't even want to say it's a satisfying ending. I think I prefer that just that Rosen just wake up and realize what a horrific thing he said. Really, in the end of it, you know, Logan is still in terrible shape. I understand she's hoping to make a return fairly soon. It sounds like there's almost no chance of justice against the perpetrators of her attack, at least in this world. And so just a terrible, terrible set of circumstances all around. And, you know, once again, that's our happy, cheery note to end the free martini lunch, Greg.
Well, that's true. As you mentioned, Jim, kudos to NYU for putting the pressure on him. I'm sure it was a forced resignation. And kudos to you and all those others who protested instantly and in his face. And to his discredit, he decided to keep going rather than understand what the right reaction was there. And, well, hopefully he's learned his lesson. We'll find out, I guess, in due course. Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you, Greg.
Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.